Bahamas, and welcome to On the Clock with Erin Green. Today is Monday, the 15th of February, 2021. I hope you got what you wanted for Valentine's Day. More importantly, I hope you got what you needed for Valentine's Day. Peace of mind, peace of spirit, community, and plenty, plenty love and hugs. I want to start today's show, before we get into it, I guess, with a small... I'm getting older, and I don't know how you do these things, really, but I want to make this sort of announcement. I have a regional colleague and friend. He's a colleague and friend of many Bahamians who is in the process of transitioning to be with the ancestors. And a part of his transition, he reached out to his community and, you know, let them know where he was in that process and asked us to reach out to him and show him support. Mr. Colin Robinson from Trinidad and Tobago is a journalist, a writer, a poet, a human rights advocate, an LGBTI rights advocate, and he is instrumental in the movement for the liberation of vulnerable people throughout the Caribbean. In honor of Colin's process of transitioning, I want to share with you my interfaith prayer. And I want to share it for those of us who are also dealing with the transitioning of our own family members and community members. May God's grace pour over you. May the ancestors guide and protect you. And may the light of the universe that shines in all of us, support and comfort you. Thank you for taking that moment with me. It's been a bit of a heavy weekend. And I was getting ready to, in fact, I was upset. I was upset all weekend. I don't like to drive, but unfortunately I had to drive this weekend. Now, I like driving. I like the act of driving. I used to drive stick shift. I love driving a stick shift vehicle, a manual transmission vehicle, and feeling the vehicle do what it's supposed to do under my feet, right? I love that. But driving has gotten so hectic in New Providence that I just dislike it. In fact, my friends will tell you, do not ask me to do anything for you that requires me to be on the road after 2 p.m. Certainly not to leave my house and start the journey after 2 p.m. And so when I saw this morning's Tribune headline, well, not headline, insight, and the headline insight, we're living in a cowboy town and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Now, that's a statement from a 36-year-old gangster remarking that the gang world is alive and well in what he calls a cowboy town, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. And that enraged me. That enraged me. I mean, I would have been even more enraged if that came from a politician, you know, a social leader, religious leader, who has a duty of care to keep trying even when they feel that they've reached insurmountable odds. So I had a neighbor. I have a neighbor. She doesn't live there anymore. But she's so, you know, she's elderly. She requires geriatric care. So she's in a living facility. And she would always tell me and remind me, if you take care of the pennies, the pounds will take care of themselves. For a long time, I didn't figure it out. But this morning, I figured it out. If we take care of the pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves. So this morning on my way into radio station, approach Marlborough Street, that's where Central Bank is, right? Four cars were ready, rearing to run the red light. Now, we say run the red light. They were going to turn left on red, except none of them had come to a complete stop at the intersection to assess whether the way was clear and they could enter the intersection. What stopped them from running the red light? A police car with its lights on. That's what stopped them. Did the police car blow its horn and give them a warning, a reminder of what they're supposed to do when they want to turn left on red? No. No, it didn't. It just kept driving. It just ignored what would have been, I guess, if we were in the U.S. system, a moving violation. Right? Unbelievable. So, when we get to Cumberland Street, the hill taking you down to the Hilton, there are officers on West Bay to the west of the hill, which is good, except all the traffic infractions are occurring on the hill that they cannot see. Imagine if they positioned those officers in places where they could actually witness the traffic offenses taking place. And before that, even before I got to Marlborough Street, there were two officers who I assume were conducting road checks, because we know that you can't just have a roadblock. The officers were standing in the road, directly across the street from a construction zone. They were in the road, causing drivers to have to veer towards the center lane. Except right in that spot, there are two massive potholes. And a pothole, like pothole is something that has just happened. These holes, I think, people knew they're there. They dug them out. People are aware that those holes are there, except for those two officers. See, the problem I had with that particular scenario was there was nowhere to pull cars over. When you realize that there is an issue with their license, or you want to determine whether, even though their license is expired, whether they have up-to-date insurance, there was nowhere to pull the cars over. We didn't see any complimentary or assisting officers, right, directing cars to turn through Bank Lane to be further assessed. I asked myself, what is the point? What is the point of these exercises? You see, if we take care of the pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves. If we focus more attention on traffic management, if we use the tools that are available to us in the traffic management sphere, then officers can use that as a tool for crime interdiction. Because you use that as probable cause. Right? Like, if we take care of the pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves. You're listening to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We are streaming live, audio and video, on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow Channel 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices. And listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can also text us on the Guardian Radio text line at 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. And that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. You can also call us 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4259. Kermit, can we roll into a break? Listening audience, when we get back from this break, I'm going to start the show. You guys, stay tuned.
Guardian Media wants you to get active in 2021 and become eligible to win a two-night stay at the luxurious Comfort Suites. Gift certificates from Rose Essentials, Bahari, Sia Monet Organic Candles, Soaps, and Scents. Lunch for two at Tiki Bikini Hut, plus a round-trip ticket and cases of water from Bahama Blue. Get up, get out, and get active. Walk, jog, run, cycle, or swim on dates and times of your choosing safely anywhere in the Bahamas. Take a photo or video of you being active and log on to GuardianTalkRadio.com contest page. Click on the Guardian Media Get Active in 2021 contest link and upload your photos and videos. Invite your friends and family to vote on your entry for your chance to win fantastic prizes. Your body and mind will thank you for being active. Guardian Media is working to help make you healthy, wealthy, and wise. Promotion ends February 26th. Winners will be announced March 5th.
It's happening. And it's all straight talk with no chaser. As Stephen Miller is unleashed on your radio each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., right here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's going to be smart talk, ideas, and innovation. Each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., only on Guardian Radio, your station for fresh news and smart talk. Trust me. You're not going to want to miss this.
Good morning, Bahamas. Welcome to On the Clock with Erin Green. On the Clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the Clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. We ended last week with a discussion with a member of staff from the Bahamas National Drug Council. I think it was an important discussion. And I want to reiterate some of the issues raised and discussed on the show. Youth drug culture, mental and psychological health and marijuana use, and some of the council's strategies, awareness, prevention, treatment, and remediation programs. Let me start by saying this, though. We are not ready to legalize recreational use. I think ultimately the prohibition should be lifted. I think it is a plant, and as humans, we have a right to consume it. But I don't think we are ready to legalize recreational use, let alone lift the prohibition. There may be individuals that are ready, that manifest the personal discipline, the mindfulness, and spatial awareness necessary to engage in cannabis use and be functioning and productive citizens that contribute to the development of our society. There may be more than you think, but that does not mean we as a collective are ready. We do not have the governmental and social infrastructure needed to enforce regulations, to minimize or eradicate youth access and usage, to enforce traffic controls and impaired driving laws, and to ensure proper border controls, or to address substance abuse, addiction, and psychological and mental health issues. We have to be honest with ourselves. We, the people that refuse to stop at red lights and stop signs in traffic, we, the people who ride up on sidewalks to avoid traffic. We the people who drive with cell phones in our hands. I've seen a guy with a laptop braced against his steering wheel while driving. And just this week, I saw a video of a man and a woman who were engaged in an explicit act while the driver was holding what looked like a blunt. And this is an indictment on both the people in that car and the people who thought the appropriate response was to video it and broadcast it over social media. We the people who don't even know that drunk driving is against the law. We, the people that refuse to bring our dump trucks and gas trucks and 18-wheelers to a stop at intersections, and I encountered two of those this morning, even entering and leaving the container port. Do you think we are ready? Is there still a truancy program? Do we have sufficient social, extracurricular, and community programs to engage young people, particularly at-risk youth? I think my greatest concerns are youth use and health, public safety and professional standards, and health and wellness. But there are a host of other issues and concerns that need to be addressed. Have we been honest with ourselves, each other, and most importantly, our children, about the drug era? The drug era. More importantly, have we addressed how addiction to cocaine and other drugs, to money, and to symbols and perceptions of power corrupted a people and may have destroyed a nation? How we watched some of our brothers and sisters create comfortable lives, some even empires, while others were consumed by the lifestyle and all of its trappings? We cannot take a step further without having these conversations. Legalizing cannabis in a structured and systematic way will potentially greatly reduce gang and drug-related gang activity. This is a good thing. See, because one of the bigger problems with cannabis use currently is that unless you grow your own, you are most likely contributing to gang activity. But we cannot, like most things, rush this decision either. The state and other civil society organizations, along with the business sector and professional services, like the insurance industry, must partner to devise, enact, and enforce a multilateral strategy and policies to ensure that we get this right. Remember Turn Left on Red? Remember the care and attention the state paid to the enactment of this change? In just over a year, drivers are not observing right-of-way, forcing their way into oncoming traffic, and some are even running straight through red lights and turning right on red. Not only was there and has there been minimal public education, there's no signage posted at intersections and virtually no enforcement of the new provisions. The unveiling of the state's medical cannabis policy will be a starting point. See, from there we can assess the state's capacity to regulate and enforce legalization. The state's capacity or willingness to ensure equal and equitable access to both the industry and to medical services and products. Also, that there is oversight, quality, and market controls, local and accessible testing and regulatory facilities. See, these will also help us to understand where the structural and cultural gaps are in the move to liberalization. I saw you there, caller. Please call back. I almost done, and I think I got some interesting questions for us today. See, Bahamians are right to be concerned about the legalization or liberalization of cannabis use. But let us address our concerns head on and transparently. I'm speaking to the government here. So, right here. Some argue that the movement of cocaine through the Americas to the global north is a direct response to global economic policies that intentionally and overtly marginalized newly independent states to maintain global dominance. See, the war on drugs is a part of a larger economic war. The war on drugs is a war on people. But we can't, and this government at this time, can't continue to make it difficult and even impossible for Bahamians to truly engage their own economy. And so, I got some questions for you. The first is, besides the connection to gang culture, what are some of the negative stereotypes or negative things you heard about smoking weed, smoking cannabis, smoking dope that were reinforced when you were young, and did they turn out to be true? For example, I grew up with TV in my personal space from I was like five. And throughout my life, constantly hearing people say, TV is the devil, the TV is the devil. And I just never believed that. And here I am about to be 45, and let me tell you something, I understand what they mean when they say the TV is the devil. I get it now. And it's not like the devil is sitting inside the TV. It's about cultural imperialism. And it's really about how important it is for you to be entrenched in images and ideas that are authentic to you and where you live. So I'm throwing these questions out again. Share some of the negative stereotypes about smoking weed that were reinforced when you were young, and did they turn out to be true? Second question, why is Scarface so popular among Bahamians? Why do so many men identify with Tony Montana? And what does this say about our culture and the drug culture in our country? I got a caller on the line. Caller, you are on the clock.
Good morning, Erin Green. How are you doing?
I am good, thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, I listened to you with Dr. Hall last week. It was a pretty interesting conversation. I wish you'd put that question to him because he's part of the drug
commission.
Drug council or the drug?
No. I think he is the chair or co-chair of the Marijuana Commission.
Right. I wish you'd put that question to him. Are we ready?
Well, listen, I'm going to have him back on as a guest. And I didn't think about that question until I had on my guest, Mandel Miller.
Because according to the Rastafarian movement, they are ready because they know they use the sentiment.
Right.
And according to the medical profession, we are ready. Or we should be ready because it's proven around the world to be a pharmacist drug. It's proven around the world to be a healer to so many areas. Like, even in my condition, with a disability, with muscle problems, it would be, my doctor would have recommended me because it was illegal.
All right, so, but listen
to... So then again, the question is, like you said, we need to have a serious discussion. Medical discussion, not a religious discussion. Because religious people would say, it is not right to do it. But in the Bible, it's a herb.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what make it different from destroying our lungs with cigarettes?
True.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when will we be ready? We all know this thing is a herb. I was in Jamaica, they used this as tea.
Yeah.
I drink marijuana tea down in Jamaica. When will we be ready, Aaron Grant?
Well,
Should we wait on the negative? Should we judge it by the negative?
No. I don't think we should judge it by the negative, but I do think that there are infrastructural gaps that need to be filled, right? Before we make that transition. I would argue that even though the Rastafarian community, I think that they have a right to consume the plant, right? I do think they have a right to consume the plant. I would ask them, how are your communities set up, right? How are your living and communal spaces set up in your camps and living spaces?
But I also should have a right to use the plant, too.
Yeah, I think they
should. I could concern my disability.
Right.
But I heard that under the law, Rita Monroe said it until Mont Rony Monka that said drugs is legal. Because you couldn't get permission from the doctors to use it.
Right.
But some doctors afraid to write the letters.
Right. So the way that the law exists right now, you can possess with authorization from the relevant ministers. So
right.
I imagine, and right, so that's one point. Secondly, how could a hospital administer codeine or a cocaine-derived product to a patient if it was illegal? The
right.
hospital, or, you know, the hospital and agents within the hospital are authorized to possess and administer. Not any nurse or staff member can do that. In fact, the storage, right, they're very strictly controlled within these spaces. So you're right.
So we did a town hall meeting on this stuff. And I believe that I know the religious folks, and trust me, I know even by some like warm members that are probably telling the pastor, turn up the radio, funky needed pursuing marijuana, of course. But I'm doing it for political, I'm not saying political, I'm going to put the politics on air again, but I'm doing it based on medical purposes.
Right.
And the medical purposes, it's good. It's a healing process.
Right. But see, now, so here's what I mean when I say we're not ready, right?
Yeah.
I don't mean that you, the individual who has taken the time to do the research about your particular condition and the benefits of potential cannabis therapies, right?
Right.
I'm not saying that you are not ready. What I am saying is that collectively, we have not put in place the systems and mechanisms necessary to ensure the minimal negative fallout from this transition.
And I agree with you. The system, first of all, the law, need to be amended, because you know, minor would be the biggest issue. If they're being exposed or sell to minor, you should get the maximum penalty of 20 years.
But see, okay,
so
stick a pin right there. What a great point, right? And we already have provisions existing in law, right, that were developed around that idea. If you, like, liquor stores should not be are prohibited from being within a certain distance from a school, right?
Right.
And we also have a similar provision for number houses, right?
Right.
Are they being enforced?
No.
Right.
Right.
They're not being enforced. So imagine now that we enact the legislation and we emphasize, and every politician get up on stage. You know, they like to get up on stage and ki-ki-ki. And they get up on stage and they say, we have strict provisions in law to ensure that the young people are safe. We'd be sitting back here watching them knowing. I know a school right now that's next to a restaurant that just got a liquor license. You could spit from the school to the store.
Right. But Aaron Grant, we need to dance size our government so it could be reinforced. is what I'm talking about. That's introduced local government for the Broward. Local government in our various respective communities would release anything that such nature would happen if marijuana to be legal to a minor. The stronger your community is to local government and local authority will make the transition more smoother to be reinforced.
I agree. But look at the state of local government.
But no, I'm talking about New Providence. Me talking about the Family Islands now. The Family Islands, I don't call that local government.
No.
The order that needs to be amended, but the local government should have come to New Providence first. Your population and make a difference. Your population make their authority different.
So look here, I got two more questions I want to ask you before you go, right?
Well, you need to write me on the show, but I will ask all kind of questions. I'm ready to talk.
You don't watch nothing. Let me ask you this.
Go ahead. Go to question.
Do you think that the elders in our communities, and by elders, we talking 25, 35, 45, 55, do the older people in our communities understand the shifts in personal behavior and personal culture that will be required of them to create environments that are not only safe for young people and children, right, but environments that encourage them to follow the law and wait until they reach the age, right, of majority to participate in marijuana use or cannabis use. Do you think your peers, because I got another caller, I want to thank you for holding on with me so long, but do you think your peers and those among us are ready?
Let me say this. I am in that category. You know, you got it on the caller. I feel that if the education and the system of what is benefit out there for them, and I think they'll be ready.
No. I ain't talking about the young people. I'm talking about us adults.
I'm talking about the adults. I'm not talking about the young people. I said if the education possess itself, to my peers then.
The same about education. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. There's a aspirant political candidate who just released a campaign video, right? And somebody pointed out that they're using, you know, they call the gun fingers, like they're doing a dance, and they're using the gun fingers in the thing, right? And at first it seems a little coolish, you know, the music is popping, the dance move, we all know that, you do the thing. But at the same time, it could be deemed as reckless and immature and a manifestation that individual doesn't understand the level of maturity, calm-headedness, mindfulness, personal discipline that they need to bring to the job if they were to become a representative of that particular community. And so I ask you, it ain't about marijuana education. It's about personal responsibility, about empathy, and the ability to see your place in a community. Do you think we as adults in this country are prepared to live and behave in a way that creates the best possible environments for our young people if we legalize marijuana use?
I would leave that to a part two.
Okay.
And let your caller, come in.
Yeah.
That is very broad.
I feel you.
So part two, but I don't know if you continue this on tomorrow.
I may do. I'm getting a lot of callers. It's really more something I wanted us to think about after last week's show. Mr. Mandel Miller is a dynamic, thoughtful, mindful speaker, and I imagine professional, right? And I thought that we had a really great conversation, But I thought that, you know, it is possible that some people may have perceived that conversation to be reckless, right? They may have been, they may have perceived it as ignoring what are real red flags, real barriers to development that have to be addressed. And I grew up in a community called Johnson Road, and I've seen the ravages of unchecked drug use.
Yeah.
And how communities can fall apart.
And I grew up in Camp Road, did the same thing.
Right.
That's why I go back to local, before you legalize marijuana, you must set up local government.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think that's a, look here. I'm glad that you stayed on the line with me, because I think that is an important strategy. We have to get local government off the ground, functioning. And we have to strategically implement a strategy specifically for the management of public spaces, right? If we were to legalize, the allocation and access to services and resources, and identifying people in your community who may need them, particularly preventative and awareness programs.
Of course.
I think it's a fabulous idea, and I hope that members of government are listening. I hope that the people on the local government board are listening, and I hope that potential and prospective candidates are listening.
And speak with the local government in place. We also got to have every professional, non-professional on board.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you just play a wider board. If you don't start, it's gonna play a wider
board. Oh yeah.
Board. So they gotta settle a strategy.
Listen, thank you very, very much, eh?
Have a good day.
Yeah, man, we're gonna roll to this break, and I'm gonna get to some texts when we get back from the break.
Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan and multiple credit cards to pay off. To keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity, we're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning, Bahamas, and welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green. Today is Monday, 15th of February, 2021. You're listening to Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Caller, hold on the line for me. Let me just read a couple of these texts. Thank you, texter. Great show as usual. People in Nassau cannot drive, white people included. Okay, sorry about that text. I don't understand the rest of your text, but this is not a class or a race issue, right? Rich people, poor people, white people, black people, they all doing a thing. Okay, so let me get to my caller. Caller, you're on the clock.
Oh, Godly Day, the universe along with you, Aaron.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. How you do?
I'm holding. Thank God for what it is, in spite of this corrupt society.
Boy, look here. That's the thing, eh?
I'm telling you.
But it's cultural. It in all us.
Yes. Yes, I mean, the majority of us, is cultural, but a lot of us don't want to participate in the majorities, are not participating in the majorities.
You listen, let me just say this. You're right. A lot of people are craving, they're yearning for a space where they could be devoid of corruption, where people try their hardest to be, you know, people are yearning for that. Thank you.
But I want to respond to a text in which you had gotten last week, Friday, right?
Okay.
What spake of, I got the rights to make money from Drunkenoo.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
The thing is, if they would, and I hope that person are listening, I hope they would take some of that money which they make from Zhongkunu and put some security around Zhongkunu practices and Zhongkunu entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, anywhere Zhongkunu at, you have a lot of violence. You have people breaking in people's cars, moving their batteries, set out of the cars and stuff like that. And anything they could get their hand on, in those cars. So spend some of your money to help,
support your own activities.
As such. Another thing is, right?
Yeah.
You talked about youngsters, basically what you were saying is that to stop some of the immaturities, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, when I was younger, we used to wait until weekend to go to the prairie ground. They used to have record hop, right?
Mm-hmm.
The matinee. Nobody used to smoke. Nobody used to drink, right? But every youngster was waiting until the weekend came to go to matinee over there at St. Francis school room.
Okay.
The thing is, today, people, and these are grown up with children, some of them have grandchildren, they want to smoke and drink with their children, you know what I'm saying? They
mm-hmm.
turning their young children on to smoking, you see mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So, the thing is, I don't see how this society going to be reconciled, pertaining to drugs and liquor, to cease it,
I got you. I understand. But believe you me, we can do it. You may not know how yet, and I don't know how yet, but I do know we can do it. We could do anything we say we value. I got another caller. Caller, you're on the clock. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. I think I hear you in the background. You eating juju or tamarind? I heard some tamarind on the tree ready to pick. Anyway, that caller is gone. I'm going to get to some more of these texts. Another text. So if we forsake the pennies, what become of our dollars? They disappear. Isn't that what's been happening? Isn't that what's been happening literally in front of our eyes? We forsake the pennies because we focus on dollars, but the dollars disappear. That's what happens when you get more dollars than cents. I see I got another caller. Caller, you're on the clock. Caller, you're on the clock. You there? Boy, look here. You know how good that tamarind must be. Okay, another text. Good morning, Aaron. Success for your program. Thank you. I wish you to have at least 10 unbroken years right. Thank you very much. I thought you was about to say 10 unbroken years of light. And I was going to say, yes, let us pray for BPL. I identify with your passion for progressive governing, inclusive of driving patents. If only we understand what it is we can learn from our driving patents, right? Because it's like a microcosm of all of the things happening in our society. I got a caller. Caller, you're on the clock.
Hi, how you doing?
I am good, thank you. Good morning.
What I want to know is medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing about medical marijuana. Is medical marijuana a cure for diseases, or is just something you smoke to alleviate the pain?
Okay.
That's what I want to know. I'm going to keep hearing about this.
There are several applications, right?
Uh-huh.
So first of all, for most medicinal marijuana applications, like at a technical level, you're not even going to be smoking it, right?
Right.
So there are companies now that are making pills and capsules, right,
mm-hmm.
for you to use. So the vast majority of, I'd say, prescribed through a doctor, right, therapies
right.
that are prescribed are not going to involve smoking.
Right. No, but I'm asking if is that
right.
it a
so,
cure?
Right. So the second thing.
Pain?
The second thing. We see people who talk about using it for pain management
right.
for chronic diseases that cannot necessarily be cured.
Right. Right.
And then we see examples of people who are using CBD or cannabidiols, right, to treat seizures, right? And so I know of a story that, you know, I personally read about it and watched a documentary on it where a father with a child who was having up to 300 seizures a day, right, worked with a grower to develop a CBD strain and eventually reduced his daughter's seizures down to a minimal of 5 or less a day. So I can't say for certain that it is curing her condition. What I do know is that that application is not about pain management, but it is reducing the effects of whatever condition she has.
Wow.
Now, the thing that inspires me is that we have a national testing lab, right, that is handling right now the COVID testing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have the capacity locally to do some of this research ourselves,
right,
and determine whether we, you know, with our scientists and our doctors and our growers, whether we can grow strains that cure particular conditions.
Right. Yeah, that's what I wanted, because the person whose name I want to call, if he was alive, he wouldn't mind. Fenton anymore. He was on the talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying how he was taking the marijuana, you know, medical marijuana. So if I ask, is it a cure?
Now, remember this.
Eventually.
Doctors practice medicine.
Huh.
And so we get to continue researching and observing, researching
right.
and observing. Mm-hmm. And let's do so with caution, right?
Right.
And so I like your question. These are the things that people need to understand.
Right, right. So I think a caller before me talk about education and town meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know when the Prime Minister intend to implement this, but he made reference to it. But he needs to start educating and having town meetings.
Absolutely.
So people can ask questions before he even talk about implementing something.
Right. And it's not just about, you know, you have this idea that, oh, these people, they just want smoke. They look at what they're pushing the government to do.
No.
People need to know what the development plans are.
Right.
So they can prepare themselves adequately to participate.
Right.
If I know that you are going to go into medicinal marijuana industry, right? I need to know what that industry is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
I may take my little furlough or my little severance pay
mm-hmm.
and decide to start educating myself
right.
and amass some degrees in cannabis plant management, right? In research and development.
Right.
So that when you do announce, well, I already know the criteria. So when you start the industry, I could be prepared and I could have a scholarship program in place so that every year we're sending at least one student off
mm-hmm.
to start a course in a cannabis related field.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why transparency is so important.
Right.
And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because I don't want people to think that looking at these herb smokers, these dope smokers just sitting in the bush waiting for the government to say
mm-hmm.
yes. There are people out here who are thinking about these issues.
Yeah, because even the Rastafarians, they were not impressed with his announcement.
No.
They were not impressed at all.
No.
They were on another talk show and they were totally not impressed.
I'm not a fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what went down. Right? But I could imagine several reasons. The lack of transparency,
right.
the lack of full engagement.
A couple of their reasons.
And just like me, I still waiting on the final Marijuana Commission report, right?
Exactly.
Because they just got it. They announced an interim report and all of a sudden it's the final thing. And
this
so constantly we're getting feedback from citizens and groups that there's not sufficient transparency.
Mm-hmm.
People are trying to prepare themselves to participate in national development, to support the agendas of the government and the wider social agenda.
Right.
But we are not being afforded the tools and resources to do that.
Right. Okay, then.
Listen, thank you very, right. very much. All right, guys, I'm going to finish off these texts. I got a text here that says, good day. Before the government prevented Bahamians from investing in foreign markets, I opened a U.S. brokerage account. I invested in a company called Planet 13. They specialize in weed and derivatives. I'm up 100% since last year. Well, good on you. That's awesome stuff. Let's use some of that money. I mean, I'm not just saying that you know me personally, right? But if the thing is doing well, start a program here, start a fund. Identify students, UB students, BTVI students, who could possibly go off and take advantage of a training course so that we could build a cadre of skills for these burgeoning industries. Another text, Ms. Green, FNM, FNM, too straight. Boy, look here. I almost thought that was a junker new rush out on Soldier Road. Good morning, Aaron. I think that those of us who are fed up by the lawless and inconsiderate drivers should speak with the MPs in our constituencies to ensure the traffic laws are enforced. Example, while on the red light, you're being blown at to move, and when you don't, they sometimes come around you and turn incorrectly right instead of left while cursing you or giving you the finger. I am far more afraid of my insurance agent than any of y'all people on this road. I also have personal integrity and discipline, and I do not want to be shamed or to be responsible for killing or injuring somebody. Y'all got to get it together. Another text. Nicole Martin's dance move was simply a spontaneous move and not related to gun culture. Her record of fighting for the Bahamian people is on record, and the FNM is picking a fighter for the people as they continue to fight for the people. Let's stick a pin right there. I could feel you, you know. I could believe you when you say that she did not intentionally engage in an act or intentionally promote gun culture. But that's how deeply entrenched in our popular culture gun culture is. That's it. That's all. Right? And, you know, maybe an attempt to connect with the people went awry. But that is how deeply entrenched gun culture is in our culture. They go on to say the fact there is a marijuana debate now is based on the fact the Minnesota-led government is taking this issue seriously and will help reducing the stigma. Yearning for no corruption won't happen under the PLP-led government. It ain't gonna happen under any of these governments until we have serious and substantive political and electoral reform. Also, I think CARICOM is a part of that vibe too. They've had a commission for forever. I hear the music, Kermit. I found a text here where somebody was talking about the thing. They must be eating gooseberries because they sour for hanging up on you. Look here, or it could have been a good sour tamarind. You know what is a good idea? Marijuana-infused guava duff. Now, that is a million-dollar idea. Only at a food festival, a marijuana food festival, the first of its kind in the region, possibly? Yeah, I think that would be a great idea. Agree that the police should be more proactive instead of counteractive. Our police need more training on dealing with the public. That's what it is. That's all it is. They need more resources. They need more training. Their own mechanisms need to respect them and take care of them so they could do their job. Anyway, Bahamas, I am running out of time. Thank you for joining me this morning. What I thought was an important conversation for us to have. Stay on the line because we got Levan Miller and Unleashed coming up at 11. Have a great day, Bahamas. You've been on the clock.